Welcome to this week's episode of the American Serial Killer Guidebook with your intrepid hosts, Elton and Cherish Morgan.
Welcome to this week's episode of the American Serial Killer Guidebook. I'm your host, Elton Morgan.
And I'm your co-host, Cherish Morgan.
And we're the Morgans. Today, we're investigating the life and crimes of one of, if not the most prolific serial killers in American history. For more than 30 years, Samuel Little went undetected as he terrorized women across the country, claiming upwards of 93 victims.
93 lives in 30 years.
That's a lot.
Quite the statistic.
Yeah. That's at least like three per year.
Yeah.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
Although he wasn't convicted of murder until 2014, Little was no stranger to law enforcement. In a crime spree that began in the 50s, he was arrested more than 100 times on charges including kidnapping, rape, robbery, and assault. And despite these charges, he spent fewer than 10 years in prison. He preyed on vulnerable women such as sex workers and drug addicts living in high crime areas, and he usually beat or knocked them unconscious before strangling them to death.
Sounds like he just attacked women who wouldn't be missed.
Exactly.
Those that don't have a lot of family support.
Yeah, people that, and even if they did have family, you know, people that were used to them disappearing for days or weeks or months at a time.
Anyway, right.
So in some instances, he would rape his victims, but he told police that he received the sexual gratification from the killing itself. His crimes finally caught up to him in 2012 when he was charged with three murders in Los Angeles stemming back to the 80s. And he was later convicted and sentenced to multiple life in prison sentences. And while he maintained his innocence at trial, he ultimately confessed to investigators and cataloged his numerous murders, providing key details, and he even drew out sketches of the victims that were unidentified. And so Little's been convicted of 8 murders in California, Ohio, and Texas. And some of the killings have been matched to Jane Doe cases going back all the way back to 1972. And the FBI analysts, they believe that all 93 of his confessions are credible because he was just putting too much detail into it, you know. And when I was doing some research on it, they said the main thing that made them believe him was that when he would start to describe one of his murders, he would get this far off look in his head, in his eyes, and they could tell that he was reliving all of it step by step. And that, you know, it's like he was actually there.
That's kind of a good thing that he remembers and relives it, because it's torture.
Yeah. And at his age, you know, he was in his late 70s. He died at 80, but he was in his late 70s, and he could still remember all of these minute details of these women from some over 30 years ago. And he could remember their faces well enough to draw them and draw such a good likeness that some of them were actually identified by family members who saw these sketches.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that he remembers things in such great detail, but he probably has no conscience whatsoever. So
now he considered them his girls. He told investigators that all of the women that he killed belonged to him. So they were kind of his private collection.
Like a narcissistic
behavior. Big time.
Yeah.
Make sure to find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit our website at taskg.net. to stay updated on our newest episodes. And I don't know about you, babe, but I'm ready to find out more about Mr. Little.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, let's get this horror show started. Samuel Little was born on the 7th of June in 1940 in Reynolds, Georgia. His mother was named Bessie Mae Little. She was 16 years old, and he told investigators that she was a sex worker. But a 1940 census lists her occupation as maid, which, I mean, of course you have to tell the census taker something. I mean, you can't come out and say,
I'm a whore.
I'm a whore, right? I'm a prostitute.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't know if they're going to go tell the police or not. I mean, I don't even know if the police would have cared in 1940. Who knows? But
yeah,
you're not going to come out and say that. His father was named Paul McDowell, and he was 19 years old when Samuel was born. And throughout his life, Samuel Little would use the alias Samuel McDowell. And I'm guessing maybe that it was used as an alias, of course, so that he could switch between names. But I think it made him, you know, taking his dad's name like that made him feel closer to his dad. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, this is just a guess. I don't know. I'm not a therapist or anything.
Right.
Little later moved to Lorain, Ohio, and that's where he was raised by his paternal grandmother, which is his dad's mother. And in February of 1954, he's committed to the Boys Industrial School, which is a reformatory for teenagers out near Columbus, Ohio. And he later said that he was sent there for stealing a bicycle. And by the time he left, he was there for a year and a half. And by the time he left, he'd been reported for disciplinary infractions 47 times.
Seems like he was put there for more than just stealing a bicycle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know when I was younger, teenager, I know guys that were in those places, and it takes repeated offenses. And it's usually serious stuff, like stealing cars, repeated counts of burglary, assault, sexual charges, things like that.
Yeah, I wonder if he was showing any type of serial killer characteristics.
Yeah, those early tendencies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had to have been.
Yeah.
Because, see, he was born in 40, and he was committed in 1954. He was only 14 years old.
Yeah.
At this time. So, if you're you've got to be doing some pretty terrible stuff for them to take you away from your grandmother and put you in this place. And he was 14. He was only in the reformatory for a year and a half, and he had almost 50 infractions.
Yeah. So, it was obviously a trend.
Right, right. This was his life. This was who he was, mm-hmm. you know? So, by November of 1956, he was arrested for breaking and entering in Omaha, Nebraska, and sent to the youth authority. And once he got out, that same year, he dropped out of high school, and he set out on his own. You know, he was going to live the nomadic life. And at one point, he was actually a professional boxer.
Hmm.
And which we both know came in handy later on in life, knocking out his victims and assaulting them.
Right.
You know, when you're a boxer, you know how to...
Where to punch.
Right. You can put it right on their chin and just put them to sleep.
Right.
And in 1961, he was convicted of burglary for a break-in at a Lorain furniture store. And he was sentenced to 3 years in prison. All right. I want everybody to remember this right here. He was convicted of burglary at 21 at a furniture store and sentenced to 3 years in prison. This is going to be relevant later on. So I want you all to remember. In 1966, Little's arrested in Cleveland, Ohio for assault and battery after beating a woman.
Did she die or?
You know, it doesn't really go into detail. I couldn't find much information about it. I mean, there's so many women that he has assaulted over the years that I don't even mean the near 100 that he killed. I mean, just if you were to add in all the ones that he assaulted and raped, it would be well over 100.
Is this the first one that he assaulted?
It's the first time he's arrested for it.
Okay.
First documented case of him assaulting someone.
Gotcha.
And on December 31st of 1970, this is where he picks up his first known victim. She's 33. Her name's Mary Brosley. And he picked her up at a bar in North Miami Beach, Florida. So they're hanging out. They meet. He gets her to leave with him. He drove her to a secluded area near the Everglades, and which should have tipped her off. I mean, there's no reason. If you're going to go somewhere to have sex, you can go park behind a building. You can go to a motel parking lot. You can go to any number of places. Mm-hmm. She should have known something was up when he started taking her ass way out into the Everglades,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's where he strangled her to death. And she is one of the only ones that he ever buried. And he buried her in a shallow grave. In May of 71, Little is charged with armed robbery in Cleveland. And while awaiting trial, he's charged with sodomy. So the guy's out on bail, and he commits another crime, and it's a sexual crime, right? So he's found not guilty on the robbery charge, and they ended up just dismissing the sodomy. He never even got tried on that.
I wonder if it was the victim that was reluctant to testify against him.
It's possible. It's possible. But I think when it comes to something like that, I don't know. I don't think the victim has the ability to drop a charge like that. I think that's the state.
I would think it would be the state, but how could he get off so easily?
I think because he got acquitted on the robbery charge, they decided he already slipped through our fingers with this one. If we try him on the sodomy, it might look like we're trying to retaliate, or we're just working overtime trying to get him to add extras. So I guess they figured maybe they didn't have enough for a jury to convict. So they thought they had him on robbery. They didn't. So maybe they weren't willing to risk the loss on the sodomy charge.
Right. That makes sense.
In 1972, after his acquittal, he met and took up with a woman named Aurelia Jean Dorsey, and she was 30 years older than him. He was born in 1940. This is 1972. So he's 32 years old. He takes up with 62-year-old Aurelia Jean Dorsey, and they stayed together. She was his girlfriend, traveling companion, his partner in crime until her death from a brain hemorrhage in 88. Okay, so they were together 16 years. So by 1988, he's 48 years old. Okay. So that means that she was 78.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were still doing this. They were still traveling around, committing crimes, you know. And the weird thing is that her involvement in any of the murders was never formally investigated. I watched all of the FBI interviews and Texas Ranger interviews, all that stuff. Not once did they ever ask him if the murders he committed in the 70s and the 80s, if she was a part of it.
Of course, he's probably not going to throw under the bus.
They never even asked.
Yeah, that's crazy that they didn't ask.
They never said, okay, you were together for 16 years. Did she take part in any of these killings? Mm-hmm. She was already dead. So they had no interest in identifying her participation. All they cared about was their convictions. You know, each of these DAs from around the country and their investigators come, they meet him, they show up. All they care about is getting the maximum number of convictions they can for themselves, for their own record.
Right.
And I hate to say it, a lot of people are listening, but we all know district attorneys don't care about innocence or guilt. All they care about is their conviction rate. And they will do pretty much anything to make sure that they get as many convictions as possible. Mm-hmm. They don't care who it hurts. They don't care who does what, as long as they get their convictions.
Right.
And throughout the 70s, Little and Dorsey, they moved around the Midwest and the South, and they supported themselves, shoplifting, burglary, fencing stolen goods. And Little confessed to committing multiple murders across both regions during that decade. And he confessed to killing a woman in 1972 who was between the ages of 20 and 25, and she was possibly from Massachusetts. He couldn't really remember, but most of the victims remain unknown. His entire history is full of a woman, a year, or a range of years, and a location and potential age. You know, he didn't really know much more than that about a lot of his victims, most of his victims. They were just,
still pretty good, though, to remember 93 victims.
Yeah.
In the year, woman. And sometimes even what they look like.
Very true. Very true. And though he was often arrested for all kinds of crimes, he spent so little time in jail. It is ridiculous how little time he spent in jail. Okay. You guys remember what I said to you earlier about remembering the fact that he did 3 years for breaking into a furniture store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In September of 1976, Little's arrested for intent to ravish and rape outside of St. Louis, Missouri. And his victim told the police that he choked her from behind with an electrical cord and forced her into his car. He beat her unconscious, then he drove to a remote location and raped her. Guess what his sentence was? He was sentenced to 3 months in the county jail.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right.
Wow.
He choked her with an electrical cord. He beat her unconscious. He drove her to a remote location, and then he raped her, and he got sentenced to 3 months in the county jail.
After getting off for the sodomy charge.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right. He did 3 years for breaking into a furniture store. But he did this to this woman and got 3 months in the county jail, which means that the court system found what he did to this woman less serious than breaking into that furniture store.
Now, was he still in the same state when this happened?
No, this is in St. Louis, Missouri, where okay. he did this to this woman.
All right.
An unbelievable failure of our justice system.
Absolutely.
In 1979, okay, let's fast forward to November of 2018. Little confessed to the murder of a 23-year-old woman in Phoenix City, Alabama, named Brenda Alexander. Okay, he murdered her in 1979. And they ended up being able to match her body to his confession and were able to give her, you know, identify her. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, find out, you know, who was killed her and close that case. In November of 82, Little's arrested for shoplifting in Pascagoula, Mississippi. And after authorities discovered that he matches a description of a suspect in the death of a 22-year-old prostitute named Melinda Rose LaPree, he's charged with her murder. Once again, I've mentioned it in other episodes, folks, serial killer luck. Unbelievable. All right. He was indicted for this woman's murder. The grand jury declines to indict him. He later confessed to killing Melinda LaPree along with four others in the Mississippi area. He confessed to the strangulations of Alice Denise Taylor, who was 27, 19-year-old Tracy Lynn Johnson, who are both from Gulfport, Mississippi, and then Julia Crutchfield, who was 36 in Harrison County, Mississippi. And as far as I can tell from all my research, is the only guy he ever killed. In 1984, he killed a 16-year-old male in Jackson, Mississippi, but they never were able to identify him. So he's one of Little's vast unidentified victims, vast number of them. So he killed all of these people, and they weren't even able to indict him on one murder back then, which he was guilty of. In 1983, he was subsequently extradited to face charges for the rape and murder of 26-year-old Patricia Ann Mount in Gainesville, Florida. And they found her body badly beaten, nude, on the side of a highway in Alachua County, Florida. And they found her on the 12th of September, 1982. All right, this is 1983, right? So in January of 84, he was actually tried for the murder of Patricia Ann Mount. And he was seen leaving a bar with her in 1982. And after deliberating for less than a half hour, dun, 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 jurors acquitted him on all charges.
Of course they did.
He got away with it again. Again!
So maybe they would have added those other murders with her, maybe. Oh, that's some serious luck right there.
I cannot believe this. He got away with the sodomy. He got away with killing Melinda LaPree. He got away with killing Patricia Ann Mount. I mean, they're either failing to charge him, failing to indict him, or they're acquitting him.
The poor family of those victims.
If I was her father, I would have not been able to deal with that. I wouldn't have. I would have lost it. And I guess he decided things were getting too hot for him in Florida. Probably needed to get away from her family. And, you know, he figured, well, it's time to head out west to California. And, okay, so he, in January of 84, all right, he's tried and found innocent of the charges for killing Patricia Ann Mount in Gainesville, Florida. Okay. We don't know what caused him to leave. Probably her family threatened him and the cops being on his back or whatever. But like I said, he decided to head out to California. He did not last very long because in October of the same year, 1984, he was arrested in San Diego for kidnapping, beating, and strangling 22-year-old Lori Barros. But she survived. Okay.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. But he was arrested for it, but not until after. All right. And then a month later, he was found by police in the back seat of his car with an unconscious woman who was also beaten and strangled. And he was in the same location as the attempted murder of Barros. That's when they took him in and they tied him to both crimes.
Surely he got caught red-handed that time.
Oh, yeah. He was later, here, check this. You're not going to believe this. This guy should have bought lottery tickets. He was tried for attempted murder, right? In both cases.
Mm-hmm.
The jury deadlocked. They couldn't agree.
How?
I don't know. So they offer him a deal and he pleads guilty to rape and assault, stemming from the attacks on these two women. All right. So rather than they couldn't convict him on attempted murder, but they could convict him on rape and assault. So they got him on that. He was sentenced to 4 years in prison.
That's right? Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. 1984, he's convicted, sentenced to 4 years. This is what makes it even worse. He was released in 87 after only serving 2.5 years.
Yeah, but he was denying a lot of this, though, and DNA wasn't a real big thing back in the 80s.
Yeah, but the woman fingered him. She pointed him out, and then he was caught with the second one, with her beat to shit.
That's true.
And strangled in the vehicle.
Yeah.
And they still couldn't get him for attempted murder, but all they got him for was rape and assault. But here, the kicker is, even with rape and assault on two separate women, he only got 4 years total.
Yeah, That shouldn't even be a minimum.
That's literally 6 months for each charge. That's rape and assault on one woman, rape and assault on another woman. So he got 6 months for raping the first woman, 6 months for assaulting the second woman. No, wait, he got a year. He got a year for rape, a year for assault, then a year for rape, then a year for assault. He sentenced to 4 years. And then he only did 2.5 of them.
Yeah, that's...
Remember, he got 3 years. He did 3 years for breaking into a furniture store.
Yeah.
Once again, this is the justice system saying that the fact that he attempted to murder, raped, and assaulted these two women, that is less serious than breaking into a furniture store. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Another massive, massive failure of our justice system.
Exactly.
And this was, once again, the fourth or fifth time that they had a chance to take him off the streets, which would have saved all of these other women's lives. Dozens and dozens of women's lives could have been saved over time and again. They just had to keep letting this man slip through their fingers.
Yeah.
I've never seen anyone with this kind of luck, ever.
Yeah. Me neither.
So, following his release from prison in 87, he moved to L.A., and in July of that year, he murdered Carol Alford. And she was 41 years old, and they found her dead on 13th of July in 87 in an alley. She was naked from the waist down and wearing only one sock. And this tends to be his calling card, I've noticed. Doing my research, seeing how a lot of the victims were found.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few of them were found naked from the waist down, wearing only one item on one foot, be it a sock, be it a shoe, be it a sandal. Yeah. I don't know what the deal was, but quite a few of them were found just like that. Usually with the bra and the shirt, or if they weren't wearing a bra, just the shirt pulled up over their chest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then just leaving her in the alleyway.
Like garbage. Like she wasn't somebody's daughter.
Trying to hide her or bury her.
She was, the way he looked at it, she was a junkie prostitute. Nobody gave a shit.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
Prostitutes are found in alleys, empty houses.
Don't care about them.
Right. She's garbage. She's not even human. She's just an object to be used, toyed with, killed, and just discarded like trash. You know, never taking into consideration the fact this is someone's child, potentially someone's mother, someone's sibling. There are people that love this person out there.
Yeah, somewhere. Yes.
And there were drag marks near her body, and the investigators believe that she was killed somewhere else and dumped in the alley, which he was very fond of killing them in his car, having sex with them in the back seat or the front seat, beating the shit out of them.
Knocking them unconscious.
Right, and then choking them to death.
Yeah.
Driving them where he thought he could get away with dumping them pretty easily, and then just moving on about his business. And she had multiple injuries indicating that she was hit repeatedly in the head before being strangled to death. And Alfred was one of seven women that Little claims he murdered in the city that just that year. Just that year in that city. The authorities later used DNA testing to establish that Little was involved in the murders of Carol Eileen Elford, who was killed in July of 87, and Guadalupe Duarte Apodaca, who was killed in September of 87, and he dumped her body in a South Central commercial garage that was abandoned.
Again, he just dumping them just pretty much in broad daylight. He knows they're going to be found.
I guess
it's a good thing that he didn't cut them up and...
Yeah, he didn't have time for that. He had no interest in cutting them up or anything. He was just like...
He got the sexual pleasure from it and then just moved on.
Like you said, the people who try to cut up victims are people who are afraid that victim's going to be found.
Right.
Because they can be tied to them in some way, or there's somebody important and they don't want that person found.
Mm-hmm.
These were just, in his eyes, these were just, like I said, junky prostitutes. There was no reason to try to hide their bodies or anything. Just toss them out and let whoever find them when they find them.
Yeah.
Little murdered Audrey Nelson in August of 89, and he dumped her body in a trash bin in downtown L.A. But here's the thing, not before she managed to get his DNA under her fingernails.
Good for her.
Yes, when she was fighting him, she was clawing him, she was fighting for her life. And it was the courage and fighting spirit of Audrey Nelson that finally brought Samuel Little to justice. Good. Years later, yes. Years later, but it was that DNA under her nails, and she fought like hell. Later on, when he was doing his confessions, Little told investigators that he killed 10 women in the South and Midwest in the early 80s before relocating to California. And some of those murders have been linked to existing Jane Doe and missing persons cases, but other victims have been identified as a result of Little's direct confessions. You know, such as 21-year-old Mary Jo Payton in Cleveland, Ohio, and Francis Campbell. Both of them were killed in 84. During a later confession, Little went into more detail, you know, about, like, Mary Jo Payton. And he said that he met her at a bar in the University Circle District of Cleveland, where they made a date, which is hooker talk for an agreement, you know, I'll give you money for sex.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they got in his 1976 Thunderbird, headed to a factory warehouse near East 82nd Street, where they had sex, and then he strangled her to death, and he dumped her body down a stairwell. While I was researching this particular crime, the factory that he dumped her at, right, in the stairwell, it was a working factory.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they found Mary Jo Payton's body is that apparently that stairwell that he dumped her down, the door that led into the factory was bolted shut. It was no longer used. It wasn't a regular entrance or exit.
Right.
But inside, employees said that for a few months, they noticed smells, and that it was over by a corner on the inside of the factory. Mm-hmm. They noticed the smell over there getting worse and worse. And then they started seeing this kind of liquid, gelatin-looking type stuff coming underneath the door. And they said that it had a severely foul odor. So they finally decided they're going to go outside the factory. They're going to walk around to that stairwell, and they're going to try to see, okay, maybe did a dog die down in there, or, you know, something.
Mm-hmm.
And when they walk over to the edge of the stairwell and look down, they see her body laying there, nude from the waist down, shirt and bra pulled over her chest, with one sandal on one foot.
It's weird.
Her arms and legs were broken and bent at all weird angles.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know if it was from, you know, him beating the shit out of her, or if it was from her, you know, bouncing down those stairs.
Yeah.
And that she was covered in maggots. They said the maggots were just, she was engulfed in maggots. And the decomposition was leaking fluids, which was going under the factory door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they found her body. The investigators say that Little met Campbell at a Savannah, Georgia bar. Okay, so there was Mary Jo Payton and then Francis Campbell, who was the second one he killed in 84 in Cleveland. He met her at a Georgia bar, and they hit it off. Oh, no, wait, I take that back. My mistake. They weren't both killed in Cleveland. Mary Jo Payton was killed in Cleveland. Francis Campbell was killed in Georgia. They were just both in 1984. Mm-hmm. Okay. Little met Campbell at a bar in Savannah, Georgia. They hit it off, and then they left. And Little took her to a construction site, and she thought that, you know, they were just going to have sex, and then they were going to go smoke some more crack and stuff. Well, he raped her, and then he strangled her. And that's where he dumped her body, hiding her under some construction supplies.
This may be a silly question, but I know a lot of women are probably wondering, where's his girlfriend at in all this while he's picking up other women at the bar and dumping them at construction sites?
Up until Audrey Nelson in 89, who he murdered in LA and then he dumped her in a trash bin, the one that got his DNA under her fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 89. His girlfriend passed away in 88.
Oh.
From the brain tumor.
Okay. Yeah. You're right.
So this is where, you know, this woman, Audrey Nelson's beating the shit out of him. She's, according to investigators, she's probably the first one after his girlfriend's death.
Yeah.
In 91, Little is back in Lorain. And he steals a carton of cigarettes, but he hits somebody while he's trying to flee the scene of the crime. So he's arrested. He's charged with aggravated robbery, but he jumped bail before his trial. He later on, he confessed to murdering 32-year-old Rose Evans in Cleveland on 23rd of August in 91. So they didn't find this out till later on. They knew that she had been murdered. They didn't know who murdered her. You know, they had found her body. And when Little stated that he was driving around Cleveland's east side when he saw Rose Evans smoking crack with a group of guys, and he offered her a ride, and he was driving this bubble top van. This is, I don't know if you know what it looks like.
I remember. Yeah.
These things were crazy looking. He said they got high, and then she asked him to take her to some old man's house to get some more drug money, where Evans went in and came out about 20 minutes later. So she probably went in, old man, you know, did what she needed to do to get a little cashola from him.
Yeah.
Okay. Once they scored more crack, Little parked the van over on East 39th Street. But Rose Evans refused to go into the back. And according to Little, she said, "I ain't going back there. You're going to kill me back there." Little eventually managed to kill her, but he said that she was able to fight, and she even regained consciousness a few times before finally losing the battle for her life.
Wow.
You know, he would knock her out and he would get ready to try to kill her, and she'd wake back up, fight him some more, you know, over and over. And she was found in an empty lot where he had placed her under two truck tires with, they had found drag marks leading up to the body. She had been raped and strangled to death after having been punched in the face repeatedly, which is from that hideous fighting.
Why couldn't he just rape her and after he's knocked her out several times and just leave her there, let her live?
He says in his interviews that he does not know when he fell in love with a woman's throat. It was the shape of the woman's throat, the texture, what he found beautiful. And taking a woman's life was just the most exquisite thing to him. He loved, even more than the sex, he loved putting his hands around a woman's bare throat and taking her life. Yeah.
And there's people out there like that today.
Oh, yeah, of course. In 2018, Little confessed to the 1994 killing of 38-year-old Denise Christie Brothers in Odessa, Texas. Man, this guy got around.
Yeah, he did.
Florida, Alabama.
Ow, no job.
But he always had some kind of cool car. You know, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, California, Texas, Louisiana. She was last seen at a Second Street motel there in Odessa in January of 94, and her body was found strangled to death on February 2nd in a field just two blocks away. So, Little received another life sentence for her murder. Okay, this is him confessing later on and whatnot.
So. Yeah.
In 98, Little pled guilty to attempted robbery for his arrest in 91, and he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. Okay, that's the one that he jumped bail on that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, for attempted robbery, he got 2 years. For rape and assault on two women, he got four.
Four.
And did 2.5.
Right.
See, it's their priority and value system is just completely fucked up.
Yeah, I'd say.
And the 90s, you know, Little told the FBI he murdered numerous women throughout the 90s in L.A., the South, Ohio. And because he was a boxer, authorities say that he had a habit of sucker punching these women to keep them at bay once he got them in the car. You know, we talked about that earlier.
Straight punt where exactly he knew where to punch.
Right.
To knock them out.
Right on the chin, you know, right on the button. And his primary targets, like you said, were prostitutes and drug addicts who he knew wouldn't immediately be missed and the police wouldn't raise a fuss over.
Right.
In 2005, he claims his final victim was a woman named Nancy, who he strangled in Tupelo, Mississippi. And the investigators believe her identity might be Nancy Carol Stevens, whose body was found off of a road that August. And in 2007... he's arrested in Los Angeles for possession of cocaine. He pleads guilty, but he didn't show up for a court-ordered drug rehab program. This eventually is his downfall. Okay, a bench warrant was issued for his arrest, but it's a non-extradition warrant.
Of course it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So between 2007 and 2012, this is 5 years, he has roughly a dozen contacts with law enforcement around the country. And some of them find the outstanding warrant, but because it's non-extraditable,
they have to let him go.
Yes. Every single time this guy gets set free.
Yep.
He is spending more time walking out of police stations than most people ever spend walking in one.
Yeah.
Right? In April of 2012, there's an LAPD detective named Mitzi Roberts who gets a DNA match on the Nelson and Apodaca cases, and then a DNA match in the statewide offender database to Little, right? Remember, before the DNA becomes a thing, they're still collecting these semen samples, these skin samples from under people's fingernails, and this particular sample is the one from Audrey Nelson underneath her fingernails.
Okay.
The year after his girlfriend died, the one who scratched the shit out of him while fighting back.
Yeah.
Well, they hold on to these DNA samples until the technology becomes a thing, till it exists.
Yeah.
And then once they develop this database, they start running old cold case samples through and things like that. Well, she gets a hit. It's Little. She gets a hit, right. She gets a hit on him in the statewide offender database to identify him, and then matches it to the Nelson and Apodaca cases. And this is April 2012. On the 5th of September, Detective Roberts receives a call from the Louisiana Sheriff's deputy saying they've traced an ATM purchase by Little to a Louisville, Kentucky mini mart, which tells me that they've got to have a bolo out on him.
Yeah.
You know, be on the lookout. And Little's found at a nearby Christian shelter. Of course, he's homeless. He's traveling. So that's pretty much how he's staying going place to place, either sleeping in his car, sleeping in shelters.
Makes sense, yeah.
They found him in the Christian shelter and they arrested him. And they extradited him to California to face the narcotics charge. Right? He's on a non-extradition warrant. But they extradited him anyway. That should have told him something.
Yeah.
All right? They extradited him on a non-extradition warrant because she had found his DNA matched these two women's murders. So they had to get him up there.
Yeah.
You know, they
had
to
get him. Sounds like they were watching him this whole time anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Charge him the way they wanted to.
Well, once they found, once she identified him through his DNA, because when you're convicted of certain felony or when you're convicted of felonies, they do a DNA swab on you.
They do now, yeah.
Right. And they did that. So she identified his DNA or identified him through his DNA and then matched his DNA to those two murders. Mm-hmm. So she immediately put a bolo out, probably nationwide.
Yeah.
And probably with police departments, law enforcement agencies, and areas that he had prior contact. Right. So in Louisiana, the sheriff probably, you know, saw his bolo. Hey, we found something. We got a hit on his ATM, purchased his card right here. So contacted him. They're like, hey, go look for this dude. We've got a DNA match on him murdering at least two women. Mm-hmm. All right. So they get him. Poof. They extradite him back to California. In November of 2012, this is September when they extradite him back to California. In November, he's sentenced to 3 years in California on the outstanding narcotics warrant. That's when the detectives get a third DNA match to Little on the Alford case. Okay. So while they're holding him and trying him, they're comparing his DNA to other DNA they've got at other cases.
Yeah.
So they've already matched him with Audrey Nelson, the Apodaca case, and they get that third hit tying him to the Alford case. So now they've got his DNA tied to three women's murders.
But why should it take that many murders to tie him to before? I mean, I understand that they're just gathering evidence and
they're
getting him here and there.
But. Right. They're doing as much as they can while he's going through the trial process for the narcotics.
Right.
Trying to get as much as they can as soon as they can. Okay. In January of 2013, just 2 months later, the LAPD detectives, they find the DNA that linked him to all three of those cold case homicides, right? The 1987 killings of 41-year-old Carol Alford, the 1989 slayings of 35-year-old Audrey Nelson, and 46-year-old Guadalupe Apodaca. And according to the FBI, all three victims were strangled. There are just all these similarities.
Right.
The L.A. County DA's office charges Sam Yolittle with 3 counts of murder and special circumstances for multiple murder.
Special circumstances for multiple murder.
It's like aggravated. You know, it could actually get you the death penalty.
Okay.
You know, it's like in Oklahoma, to get the death penalty, there has to be special circumstances. Otherwise, you get life in prison.
Right.
And in California, it's not a death penalty state anymore. It might be. I can't remember if they abolished the death penalty or if they still have it, but they just don't kill anybody.
I think California does.
I think you're right. I think they do still have the death penalty. They just don't actively enforce it.
Yeah.
And in September of 2014, following a brief trial, the jury finds Little guilty on 3 counts of first-degree murder and the deaths of Alford Nelson and Apodaca. And he's later sentenced to consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. And at the sentencing, he starts screaming, "I didn't do it! I didn't do it!"
Of course he did.
Knowing goddamn good and well that he did it.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to make a fuss and put on an act, you know, mm-hmm. like when we were discussing Eileen Wuornos, you know, she even admitted she was trying to put on an act.
Yeah.
You know, totally, trying to beat the case.
Yeah.
And in 2018, after gaining Little's trust, a Texas Ranger named, and this is 4 years later, he's in, he knows he's done. I mean, he's appealing and stuff, but he knows it's not going anywhere. I mean, I'm sure by then his lawyers told him, you know, get comfortable, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, you're like 78 years old. Even if you go through the appeals process, which could take years, you'd probably be dead before you even get through your appeals.
And I'm sure he realized that he's getting too old to be knocking women out anyways.
Right. And I mean, he's a transient anyway. You know, you can't be in your late 70s traveling around the country hustling to get money every day and then living in shelters.
Right.
I think he finally realized, you know what? I'm being taken care of by the state. I've got my own room. I've got three hot meals. I've got a place to sleep. I've got free health care. You know, I've got dominoes and spades with the guys in the day room, and I got a library access. I mean, he had everything he could want. Basically, he spent his entire life murdering women.
Doing what he wanted.
Right. And then retired on the state's dime.
That's sad.
Yeah. So he had no reason not to start confessing. He didn't have anything to lose. If anything, the worst thing, like I told you when we were watching that documentary on him, the worst thing that the state could have done was turn him loose. Because he'd have been 78 years old out on the street with nothing. No car. He'd have been standing on the corner with nothing but what he had on.
Yep.
That would have been the worst thing they could have done to him in his eyes.
Yeah.
So, like I said, in 2018, he started talking to Texas Ranger James Holland, who began interviewing him. And with the help of the FBI analyst Christy Palazzolo and the Department of Justice senior policy advisor Angela Williamson. And up to that point, you know, he was 78. He'd maintained his innocence, but he soon began detailing all of his crimes for, like I said, the reason that I think we just laid out.
Yeah.
You know, he was in quote unquote retirement by the state.
Right. He's getting old.
Right. And so Little shared what names he could remember and even sketched what his victims looked like. And over the next year and a half, he gave investigators 650 hours worth of interviews. That's a lot of interviews. And you know he loved all this attention.
He must have loved to talk a lot.
Well, he had investigators from all over the country coming to see him. Even ones from states that he didn't kill the people in, but they just wanted to make sure that some of their Jane Doe's and missing persons cases weren't related to him. So 650 hours, that's a lot of time. He's basically spent all of his time in interview rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know or not, but if anybody who's watched true crime documentaries and stuff like that, when they watch the part where the cops have the person in the interview room and they're interviewing them, what do they always bring them? Pop, chips, burgers, pizza. They bring them food, junk food, yeah. You know, fast food. So if he's spending all of this time, you know, he's sleeping at night. He's getting up in the day. He's going to these interviews, eating junk food with all these investigators.
Yeah.
You bring me this, you bring me that, you know, and they're going to give it to him because they don't want him to clam up.
Yeah.
And as long as they keep giving him what he wants, he keeps talking.
Yep.
So this guy's getting all this attention. He's getting taken care of by the state. He's getting all the free fast food and shit that he could want every day.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but anybody that's been in jail, they would do anything just to get out just for a minute, just to get outside that pod.
Hell yeah. Especially if there's a damn Whataburger waiting on you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? All right. So the ones he told him the names he could remember and sketched some of the victims, gave him 650 hours worth of interviews. And all of this eventually put his number of victims at 93, though he said he stopped counting at 84. And I was blown away by this part. He said in an interview that he could only keep track by keeping a victim total by state rather than an individual count. You know, like
whatever
works. There was 16 in Alabama. There was, you know, 5 in Florida. There was 32 in California. I mean, that's how he kept track, was the number of victims by state.
Why would he want to even keep track? I don't.
They were his women.
That's his fetish.
In the interviews, he calls them his girls. They're his. He said that once he killed them, they became his. So he wanted to remember every single one. He cherished the memory of killing every single one. Then he said that part of the reason that he remembered them all so well is because he had over the years, he had relived each murder multiple times to the point where I guess he had burned those memories into his brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's bad.
Yeah.
Other people look at photo albums. He remembers his rapes and murders and assaults on women.
Yeah.
And that 16-year-old boy.
Well, he's going to have to live that in hell, unfortunately.
Yeah. 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 I wonder about that. In December of 2018, he pled guilty to the 1994 murder of Denise Christie Brothers in Odessa. And as part of the deal, he avoided the death penalty, received another life sentence from her. And this seems strange to me because we both know Texas and how fond they are of using that death penalty.
Yes.
They literally, just this year, have already killed like one or two people.
Yeah.
But then again, so is Oklahoma. Oklahoma just killed their second guy the other day.
Yeah, they did.
And it, you know what they say, you know, what one state does, Texas does times two. So Little had a photographic memory, and he was able to describe where he met and killed the victims, where he left their bodies, what the victims looked like. The only drawback to his memory was that he didn't really have the ability to accurately judge the time frames, you know, and the distance from places to place. And sometimes he was proven to be off by like more than 10 years and like 40 miles. But still, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all.
In August of 2019, he pled guilty to the murders of four women in Ohio. Right? I'm all for his justice, but there's a part of this that just kind of, it just makes me shake my head and roll my eyes. All right? The four women in Ohio were Anna Stewart, you know, whose body was found in 81 in a suburb of Columbus, the murder of Mary Jo Payton in 84, the murder of Rose Evans in 91. You know, this is when, in August 2019, when all of the identification of these women that we discussed earlier, you know, mm-hmm. whenever, you know, they realized who they were and tied him to those killings.
Yeah.
And he says there was also an unknown woman that he murdered more than 30 years ago there, but they haven't even found her body yet.
He actually hid a body?
I don't know. He just dumped it somewhere and maybe just vegetation Animals. Grew over it. And it just happened to be in an area that nobody's been.
Yeah.
This is what I don't understand. He was convicted of those four murders, including the woman that he said he killed 30 years ago that nobody was ever found. And he doesn't know the name. All right. How the hell do you get charged for and plead guilty to a murder of someone without a name, a body, or even a date of the killing? He just said that he had killed somebody. And they convicted him for it. He got a murder conviction on it. There's no evidence beyond him saying, I killed somebody here on this year.
I don't know how they could charge him for that either.
They convicted him. I guess at that point, the DA was willing to take his word and just keep racking up convictions, regardless of actual evidence.
The DA wanted to rack up.
And the judge was, the DA wanted to get more convictions on a Samuel Little, the country's most prolific serial killer. You know, that was good for his reputation and his record. The judge got to get convictions, got to pass judgment on a serial killer, which was good for his reputation, you know, for future elections and assignments. The DA and the judge could both say, oh, yeah, I helped put away serial killer Samuel Little. You know, they could use that in their election campaigns.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so in October of 2019, the FBI confirmed that they officially named Samuel Little the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. That's a big title. That's a big, big title. And they match more than 50 of the 93 murders that he claimed to commit to existing, you know, missing persons or found bodies. Mm-hmm. And the FBI released a timeline of Little's life and crimes, hoping to identify more of his victims. And as his confessions were matched to existing cases and new victims were identified, more murder indictments were being filed across the country. Up until his death on 30th of December in 2020 in a Los Angeles County hospital under the supervision of the California Department of Corrections, Little continued to work with James Holland, the Texas Ranger, to help identify his victims and to detail his crimes. And by this time, he had been matched to more than 60 of the unsolved murders and missing persons of the 93 he confessed to. So they had already worked their way up to over 10 more. And as a side note, this is a little personal point of interest for everybody out there that relates to my wife, Cherish, and I. Little was arrested on the 16th of January in 2010 for drug possession in Wichita Falls, Texas. Okay. What's scary is that my lovely wife and co-host, Cherish, and I, we were living 50 miles from there at that time. So it goes to show that although you may feel safe and in control of your life, there's always a monster waiting. And it's usually much, much closer than you think.
And our daughter was already in like sixth grade at that time.
Isn't that crazy? The worst offending serial killer in United States history
So close.
50 fucking miles from our family. That, oh my God. I mean, what if that day that he got caught down there, he decided to go a little further and came here?
Yeah.
And happened to see you coming out of some store or getting gas or driving by yourself in some rural area or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, chance is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, according to the worldatlas.com and other online sources, there are 50 or more active serial killers loose in the U.S. at any given time. So right now there's an average, probably a lot more than 50 serial killers active in this country right now. So just say there's 50 and there's one per state, which means that no matter what state you're in, the chances are that right now, you, dear listener, are within 300 miles of an active serial killer.
Very.
Very. Kind of puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Well, folks, we've come to the end of another episode. I want to thank you for joining us this week, and stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be just detailing the crimes of the Zodiac Killer.
Zodiac.
Who murdered five known victims in the San Francisco Bay Area between December of 1968 and October of 1969. And what made it fun for him was that he liked to taunt police by sending encrypted ciphers to the San Francisco Chronicle.
And he's never been caught.
Very true. He very well could still be out there. He could be living next door to you. Don't forget to help support our show by visiting our Patreon or buying us a cup of coffee. And remember that if you sign up for a Buzzsprout account and you use our link in the episode description, you get a $20 Amazon gift card free. Okay? Thanks again, and we'll see you next time, folks.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the American Serial Killer Guidebook. Be sure to subscribe. Visit us at taskg.net. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And join us next week for another exciting episode filled with murder and mayhem.